Now, page 58, verse 7. I'm trying to read more accurately and put in less mistakes. It was just called to my attention, and I can put that on the tape. The back on page, can't find it now, 56, that I said Israel's, should have said Israel's servitude, and I didn't say that. So you go back and look at the page there, and it'll be corrected. All right. I'm sorry I make these mistakes. I shouldn't think so far ahead, but I'm trying to get you to horse after horse. So let's go to page 58, verse 7. When he opened the seal, namely the fourth, I heard voice of the fourth living creature saying, "You go." Page 59. And I saw, behold, a green horse, and the one sitting above upon it. Now, your King James has a pale horse, I think, for that. It's green. It's green horse. The name to him was the Death, and the Hades was following with him. And authority was given to them upon the fourth of the earth to kill with sword, with famine, with death, even by the beasts of the earth. Now, I'm going to have to break this verse down for you in a little while. Let's go a little further first. Now, the fourth seal, this horse is green, a very difficult color to understand. Green in the New Testament, in most cases in the Old Testament, is only associated with vegetation. In most cases, grass. This rider compares to the destroying angel. 1 Chronicles 21. There are these destroying angels. And Jehovah spake unto Gad, David's seer, saying, "Go and speak unto David, saying, Thus saith Jehovah, I offer thee three things. Choose thee one of them, that I may do it unto thee." This was for his sin. So Gad came to David and said unto him, "Thus saith Jehovah, take which thou wilt, either 3 years of famine, or 3 months to be consumed before thy foes, while the sword of thine enemies overtaketh thee, or else 3 days the sword of Jehovah, even pestilence in the land, and the angel of Jehovah destroying throughout all the borders of Israel. Now therefore, consider what answer I shall return to him that sent me." Now notice the sword of Jehovah, even pestilence in the land. See, that's equated there. That's interesting. All right, 13. And David said unto Gad, "I am in a great strait. Let me fall, I pray, into the hand of Jehovah, for very great are his mercies, and let me not fall into the hand of man." So Jehovah sent a pestilence upon Israel, and there fell of Israel 70,000 men. And God sent an angel into Jerusalem to destroy it. As he was about to destroy it, Jehovah beheld, and he repented him of the evil, and said to the destroying angel, "It is enough. Now stay thy hand." And the angel of Jehovah was standing by the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite. And David lifted up his eyes and saw the angel of Jehovah standing between earth and heaven, having a drawn sword in his hand, stretched out over Jerusalem. Then David and the elders, clothed in sackcloth, fell upon their faces. Now this, note the writing by the side there. Note the choices God gave David. Famine, sword, and sword of Jehovah, even pestilence, which is compared to the death of this passage. It's not difficult to understand why this angel is named the Death, but it's more difficult to determine what is meant by the Hades was following with him. That's even worse. The word Hades, occurs only 10 times in the New Testament. That's the word, by the way, that they translate hell. Now, I didn't translate that. I left that Hades, leave it stand as Hades, and then you don't get involved. The minute you translate some of the words hell, like Gehenna, they translate hell, now you're making your theology, your opinion, and I try not to do that. This word is used to translate Sheol in the Old Testament. Sheol appears in King James 65 times. Now, here's one of the reasons, this is a sidelight, this has nothing to do with our subject particularly, but here's one of the reasons there's so much trouble about who goes to hell and all of this. Because of this, Sheol appears in King James 65 times, translated grave 31 times, hell 31 times, and pit 3 times. But it's pretty hard, you see, to justify that if you're discussing something with somebody. Because if you use a verse that has hell in it, they'll promptly substitute grave in it. And they're justified to put grave in there. So then you don't get very far. And it's this thing that continues to plague me. There are all kinds of opinions concerning hell, most of which hang on an opinion of a particular scripture or even mythology. None of the New Testament passages are easy to understand. And I thought we'd better take a look at them. In the Old Testament, we can't do all those. But look at Matthew 11:23. And thou, Capernaum, shalt thou be exalted unto heaven? Thou shalt go down unto Hades. See, now there's American Standard, Hades. For if the mighty works had been done in Sodom, which were done in thee, it would have remained until this day. Until of Hades you shall descend. Now, how can Capernaum descend into Hades? You see, you've got real problems with this. Only if we accept a figurative sense can I understand this verse. That is, that Capernaum would descend from its position then until it passed into the shades of history. Only in that light can I understand it. And, of course, that's exactly the condition that Capernaum is in right now. It's just ruins sitting there on the side of the Sea of Galilee. Now, Thayer's lexicon develops the word from a not and edain to be seen, not to be seen. Now, if that's the correct etymology of the word, then it's developed from just an unseen state. And many say that's the correct meaning. So that Capernaum would sink to an unseen state. And that's what it is. It's no longer a city. There's just ruins there that the tourists visit. Now look at 10:15. And thou, Capernaum, shalt thou be exalted unto heaven, thou shalt be brought down to Hades, till of the Hades you shall descend. See, same thing in Luke. Matthew 16. And I also say unto thee that thou art Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades shall not prevail against it. Margin, and gates of Hades, not they will prevail of her, that is the assembly. Again, only in a figurative sense is possible. You can't make it into a very literal sense with gates at the door of a hell. See? Because how would gates come up to prevail against anything? It has to be in a figurative sense. All right, Revelation 1:18. And here, the living one, and I was dead, and behold, I am alive forevermore, and I have the keys of death and of Hades. Again, you must take a figurative sense, as it must also be in our present text. Revelation 20. The sea gave up the dead that were in it. Death and Hades gave up the dead that were in them. And they were judged every man according to their works. And death and Hades were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death, even the lake of fire. Now, one thing, there are three places mentioned, sea, death, and Hades. These most certainly must be figurative. How does one cast death into the lake of fire? See, very difficult situation. There must be figurative passages. But now don't you see how we get into such trouble when we say everybody that doesn't believe goes to hell, goes to Hades? For the simple fact is, it's an unseen state, doesn't prove any particular place, and here, Hades gave up the dead, but also, you see, you have the sea gave up the dead, and death gave up the dead. So there were two other places as well. So this is a difficulty you have. In fact, I was surprised. I came on a work, I forget whose it is downstairs, I have to think a minute, and way back about the middle of the 1800s, he said that what the church was beginning to teach was that you go to heaven or to hell, one or the other, when you die. And he says that's as bad as teaching purgatory, because he said that isn't supportable in Scripture at all. So they were refuting this back about the middle of the 1800s, but it has taken hold because it's a very simple way to look at things. Remember that slogan I picked up and put in one of your courses somewhere? That a simple little thing that's wrong is often accepted much more readily than something that's right and very complex. So they just like the little simple thing even though it's wrong. All right, now we go a little bit further. Acts 2:26, "Moreover, my flesh also shall dwell in hope, because thou wilt not leave my soul unto Hades, neither wilt thou give thy Holy One to see corruption. Being therefore a prophet, and knowing that God had sworn with an oath to him that of the fruit of his loins he would set one upon his throne, he foreseeing this spake of the resurrection of the Christ, that neither was he left unto Hades, nor did his flesh see corruption." Now on the side, abandoned with reference to Hades, unseen state. In this case, theological opinion enters the case. You're going to have to decide what you want to do. Now Luke 16, this is the only New Testament passage, and that before the cross, that gives us a very little about the literal hell. In Hades, this is the rich man, he lifted up his eyes, being in torments, and seeing Abraham afar off, and Lazarus in Abraham's bosom. That's the only verse in the New Testament on which they found their doctrine of hell. That's all. And you don't know why he's there, really, not clearly stated. You can see some indications in the passage, but it's before the Lord Jesus Christ died, so you could hardly say it's because he rejected Jesus Christ. All right, now, page 61. "I regret having to introduce all of these passages on Hades or hell, but they are necessary to show that the figurative meaning predominates. Thus, verse 8, page 59, Hades was following with him, must be understood as the unseen state as a result of death, is death's companion. This destroying angel afflicts one quarter of the earth with the same punishments God used against Israel. Sword," and this, by the way, is rumphia. That's not dagger. That other one was makaira. This is rumphia. War sword, not dagger. Famine and death equal to pestilence. And we looked at 1 Chronicles, and you can go to 21:59. There is a difference, however. David fell into the hand of Jehovah, not man. We read that. In this present instance, we have an interesting Greek construction where the King James ignores. Now watch this. I found this and I was really pleased. Revelation 6:8, to kill. Now it says to kill one with sword. N is in. Those of you that have had Greek, it's N. See, N rumphia. And N in the dative case like this can bear the word with. And in the dative it usually does. So with sword. Now you have the same way with famine. See? And then you have with death. Or in death, okay? Now, these N could be in, which would be correct. You can change them all to in if you want them. With sword, or in sword, kill in famine, kill in death. You can have them in if you want them. But now the Greek changes to show the agent. And this is the amazing thing. The next word is by the beasts of the earth, instead of directly by the hand of the Lord, as in the case of David. Remember, now hold it, better hold it there a minute. Now let's go back and let me see if I can't point that out a little better to you. Go back to page 59. And if you got your markers, even if you don't know Greek, don't worry about it. And come down, count from the top your Greek lines. Don't count the English lines, count the Greek lines from the top of 59. Line 1, line 2, line 3, line 4. Stop at line 4. Now go in line 4, past that comma, to kill. And that's the verb there. Now there's your first N. See? N. E-N. That's an N that looks like a V for those of you who have no Greek. That's an N. With sword and in. That's that N again. Famine and in or with death, chi, even, by, that's the word by, the beasts of the earth. So what it seems to be saying, as far as I'm concerned, that the people are going to be killed with sword, with famine, and with death, and the agent killing them, the beasts of the earth. Well, now can you picture a lion running around with a sword killing people? Can you picture a lion running around causing famine, eating all the grass so they can't eat? You can't picture that. You can't picture that at all. So you've got to watch your literal. By the beasts of the earth, what are they? Instead of directly by the hand of the Lord. Remember, beasts represent nations. And I believe we have a picture of war on international proportion. That's what I'm trying to show you. Now, do you remember the lion? The winged lion was the nation of Babylon. We've had that. You can't go back and do it now. But the winged lion, page 61, I'm at those pictures. The winged lion is ancient Babylon. And the winged lion is currently Iraq. And that's why the Iranian representative said that Hussein of Iraq wants to be the next king of Babylon. He's the lion. And then the bear underneath him, the bear is Iran, Medo-Persia. And these two are already at it. And then we have, go over to this terrible beast with all of his horns, is the old Roman Empire. And in essence, that's made up of Western Europe. That's Western Europe, the 10 common market countries, if you like, make up the old Roman Empire. That's what it occupied. And then you can go to the leopard and its four heads. And you go to the leopard with its four heads, and the leopard represents Greece, but it represents a little more than that because those heads include Greece and Turkey and Syria and Egypt. Remember? We took all this course. And then you see over to the right, you see the seven-headed beast. And this is why you're seeing the shuffle in the Middle East. Because you've got the leopard all right. That's Greece all right. You're all right with Egypt back. Egypt is there. And we've got, after Egypt, we got the After Egypt, we should have Assyria lion, and you don't have an Assyrian lion. And you haven't got that yet. You haven't got Assyria yet on the scene. Following Assyria, then you follow this lineup that you've got here. You have Babylonia, the Iraq, and Iran, and Greece, and Rome. You have all those on the stage of history, but you're missing Assyria. So what's going to, and you have the Papal Empire, the Vatican Empire. The Vatican Empire is one of these beasts. And they are all there in this whole area that's going to cause the war and the trouble. But you see, as yet, you don't have Assyria. And the Kurds are trying to get their independence. And we're told that the Kurds are the ancient Assyrians. And that's why we've had statements made that by the end of this year, we can expect to see an entirely new map of the Middle East area, because we believe that Assyria is coming on the scene and coming up very rapidly as the Kurds ask for further independence. And with Syria closing their border to Iraq, you can see that Syria feels threatened. And Syria is one of those heads. And they ought to feel threatened because they're going to lose Syria. Syria will be lost altogether. I don't think Syria will exist. For the simple reason, remember, you've got a prophecy that Damascus will be totally obliterated, totally destroyed. And that's never been filled yet. And once that's gone, Israel's land takes Damascus. That belongs to Israel. And so when they take all that, you can see where we're going. We don't know how soon, of course, and we don't know which is going to take place first. But if we watch our Bible prophecy, it should be no surprise to see Israel annex the Lebanon, because Lebanon belongs to Israel, all of it. So they'll annex it sooner or later. They'll get around to annexing Jordan. All of that will belong to Israel. And no wonder everybody's upset. And they knew that when we were over there. They all knew that. That's what they were saying. That's why the PLO is complaining about Israel. They said what they want is they don't just want to be a nation. They want to take all the land clear to the Euphrates. They knew that. They're scared to death. And that's exactly what Israel's going to do. And when I was there and went to the Jerusalem Post, some of you know the story, and I went over and sent Al was with us and Joel, and I wanted them to go on the tour, but I wanted to go get these subscriptions at the Jerusalem Post for the fellows and people. I went over to the Jerusalem Post, and they all went on the rest of the tour, and I spent the day going over there, and I got over there, and I got talking with them in the Jerusalem Post office, and I told them, I said, why don't you go take Syria and Damascus? And he said, well, who wants Syria and Damascus? I said, I don't care whether you want it or not. God's going to give it to you. They said, go on home. You're worse than the soldiers. And so, anyway, this is the attitude. They aren't ready to go ahead yet. They're not ready to put their full trust in the Lord yet. And God will bring them to that point sooner or later. So that's the way I see that you have to look at this fourth horse. Now, these particular beasts have kept the world involved in war for nearly 4,000 years. Do you realize that? These beasts you see in front of you have kept this world involved in war for 4,000 years, but never on the scale which began with World War I. One more thing before we move on. Both Rider 2 and 4 are mentioned in connection with the earth, whereas Riders 1 and 3 are not, at least directly, so connected. Rider 4 is said to be above upon the horse, the others on their horses. I don't understand that. I don't know why. I just call it to your attention. Page 62. And when he opened the fifth seal, I saw underneath the altar the souls of the ones having been and still slain because of the word of the God and because of the witness which they were having. And they cried with a great voice, saying, till at what time, the despot, namely the holy and authentic, are you not judging and avenging our blood out of the ones residing on the earth? Page 63, and a white stole was given to them, each one. And it was said to them, in order that they themselves might rest again yet a little time, till also their fellow slaves and their brothers, namely the future ones, to be being killed also as they might fulfill what? Their lives, there's no words beyond that, might fulfill. Now, look at the King James. And I think maybe we ought to read it so you get familiar with it. When he had opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of them that were slain for the word of God and for the testimony which they held. And they cried with a loud voice, how long, O Lord, holy and true, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth? And white robes were given unto every one of them, and it was said unto them that they should rest yet a little season, until their fellow servants also and their brethren that should be killed as they were should be fulfilled. Now the fifth seal, I have for a long time maintained that one of the greatest difficulties in understanding prophecy is the fact that Gentiles have long been trying to make a Jewish book into a New Testament Christian book. It's customary to call these souls the Christian martyrs. Now, if you look up anything that's being taught on it, you'll find they call them the Christian martyrs. Now, I don't know why we did that. On what basis? Why are Christian martyrs kept in a separate place from other Christians? That never made a bit of sense to me. Why would you want to keep Paul as a Christian martyr under the altar, where the other Christians have their bodies and are standing before the throne? I couldn't figure that out, why he should be penalized for being a martyr. Why are Christian martyrs in a sort of soul sleep? Because he tells them, rest yet again a little while. Why are Christian martyrs under the Old Testament altar anyway, when they never were under law? Why are Christian martyrs calling for vengeance when they never did that before when they were on the earth? Page 64. Let us note carefully all the facts we can find and see if we cannot determine some better explanation for the meaning of this broken seal. These souls are under the altar. normally a direct connection with Israel. 2, they are specifically called souls. 3, they are said to have been and remain slain, a perfect tense. The verb is spato. Spato is a word, except in 1 John 3:12, Cain's slaying of Abel, that only occurs in Revelation. This verb is used in the Septuagint for the Passover, for the slaying of the bullock. Now let's look at a few of these words, this spato, this slay. Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male, a year old. You shall take it from the sheep or from the goats, and you shall keep it until the 14th day of the same month, and the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it at even. All right, now look at Leviticus 1:5. And he shall kill the bullock before Jehovah, and Aaron's sons, the priests, shall present the blood and sprinkle the blood round about upon the altar that is at the door of the tent of meeting. For the slaying of the bullock, there it is again, you see. Now, this verb is used many times in reference to killing the burnt offering. Leviticus 4:24. He shall lay his hand upon the head of the goat and kill it in the place where they killed the burnt offering before Jehovah. It's a sin offering. And it's used in Ezekiel 44:11. Yet they shall be ministers in my sanctuary, having oversight at the gates of the house, ministering in the house. They shall slay the burnt offering and the sacrifice for the people, and they shall stand before them to minister unto them. So it's connected often with the burnt offering, and that's, remember the word, and there it is for in front of you again, holokautoma, which is Holocaust again. You're back to that word Holocaust we've already discussed. 5. These souls cry for a judging and revenging, but this is not New Testament. Look at Acts 7:60. And he kneeling down and cried, this is Stephen, with a loud voice, Lord, lay not this sin to their charge. And when he had said this, he fell asleep. See, now there's a Christian martyr. He wasn't asking for vengeance. All right, Matthew 5:44. But I say unto you, love your enemies and pray for them that persecute you. He didn't say anything about calling for vengeance. Look at Deuteronomy 32. Rejoice, O ye nations, with his people, for he will avenge the blood of his servants. He will render vengeance to his adversaries, and will make expiation for his land, for his people. The whole idea is in the Old Testament. God's avenging of his land and his people Israel, the subject would take more than even a single course would be able to show. But note a few verses. Now, this would take a lot to do this. Hosea 13:9. It is thy destruction, O Israel. Thou art against me, against thy help. Where now is thy king, that he may save thee in all thy cities, and thy judges, of whom thou saidst, give me a king and princes? I have given thee a king in mine anger, and have taken him away in my wrath. We better leave it there till later. Thank you.